Hey, everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day. And I got to say, that is probably my favorite opening music that we use. So, well, hey, guess what,
that?
Folks? I was actually just going to take a look at that. I don't know if it's the Cure. Before the end of the show, because I know inquiring minds want to know, we will find out, because I just know it's my favorite. That's how I roll. Surface. So
nice.
Jeremy Roberts, welcome back to Drive Through HR. Hit me with a
hard question
already. What are you doing to me? Oh my gosh. So happy Wednesday, first of all. I haven't talked to you for a while, much less seen you. You don't call, you don't write, but that's all right. I'm not bitter.
Right. Well, we see each other online daily.
That is true. It is a constant stream of consciousness. There's no doubt about that. So,
yep, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, well, introduce yourself to our lovely listeners, and then we'll roll into our big questions.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate you guys having me. My name is Jeremy Roberts. I am currently the editor of SourceCon, and with that responsibility, I also organize the agenda for two SourceCon conferences annually. SourceCon is owned by ERE Media, so I blog a little bit on ere.net, and as well, I spoke at the ERE conference in the fall, and then I'll be at the conference again in the spring. So that's my current role. Before that, I spent, I don't remember exactly how long, over a decade working as a recruiter. I started in the agency world, and then I made my way into RPO and retained search for a while, and then ultimately my last position was as a sourcing manager, leading a team of 24 sourcers for a large RPO engagement. And then when I left there, I went straight to SourceCon. So that's my travels through the talent acquisition industry.
Dude, that's, it's so funny. Some of my most favorite, if I have to start making a list of, my most favorite people in kind of our HR, kind of more social ecosystem, HR ecosystem, the sourcers always ping the top of the list. It's so funny. I just migrate to those kind of the data people. But there's so many of them that I could spend, days just digging into these crazy conversations, and I just learn so much all the time. So I love the space you're coming from, and I was so happy to hear you jumping on to take over SourceCon. So, well, just, and I was this way. I asked this question myself, 2010, I was in, April. I'll never forget it. I was at a conference, and I got to ask Ryan Leary and Chris Havrilla, what the hell is sourcing, right? And that was the first time I met both of them and have never looked back. Two amazing people. And so for our audience, if you can explain what exactly, when you hear sourcing, what exactly is that?
Yeah, so sourcing is funny. It's one of those words that it brings up a different image to everyone, depending on what their background is and what their experiences are. So I'm going to give you my definition, and then I will kind of break down what some of the misconceptions are based on people's backgrounds. So my definition is sourcing is basically the front end of talent acquisition, which includes candidate identification and locating people on the internet or by phone sourcing and, making use of information that you can find and putting together their contact information with that. That is the original definition of sourcing. What's interesting is everybody, depending on what background you come from, you have a different perspective of what a sourcer is. When I started out, sourcing was really kind of where they put you when they didn't trust you to be on the phone with a client yet. They would call you a sourcer, and you would go and interview candidates to learn about the industry. And then you would kind of, as you got more experience, move up into a recruiter seat. And they actually called that, you know, once you make a few placements as a sorcerer, you'll get your desk, and they actually gave you a computer. And so it was kind of a junior position when I started out. Over the years, as OFCCE compliance has gotten more strict and all of the documentation required for, you know, the recruiters to fill out and track in their ATSs has gotten more complicated, the sourcing role has really become what used to be a recruiter. I mean, if you look at the sourcers in a lot of large corporations now, what they do is they kind of carve out, you know, 10 really tough positions or 15 really tough positions and give them to a sourcer, and they're not responsible for all the documentation. They're really just identifying candidates and engaging candidates. So that's kind of the current view of what a sourcer is. In fact, we did a survey earlier in the year, and I presented the results at SourceCon in October, but 79% of the people that responded to our survey that had the title of sourcer, either, you know, they had sourcer in their title somewhere, 79% of them are actually responsible for candidate engagement now. So that first phone call and phone screen. So they would, 79% of them talk to the candidate before they present them. Whereas I would say 5 years ago, they were really just building lists of names and handing them off to recruiters. So it's, the definition of what a sourcer is has definitely changed.
Do you think that change is a positive change, or is it a dilution kind of in that functional siloing of, you know, the process? Because just to give a little background, you work for a really good recruiting company, because when I started in recruiting, they were like, oh, my God, thanks for showing up. Here you go. You're officially a recruiter, sourcer. You're everything. We're not actually going to take you through a process of letting you learn the business. So it's like, here's the phone book. Start calling. Here's a position description. If you don't understand it, ask one of the other recruiters, and there you go. And so
old school, like 90s. See, I enjoy, first of all, there are different people would answer that question differently. Okay, there are people that love the candidate identification piece, and that's all they want to do is build lists of candidates. Personally, I love the selling. I love finding a candidate, doing whatever I can to get them on the phone with me, and then getting them interested. I love the engagement piece. So it's not necessarily positive or negative to me. It's just kind of reflective of our current situation. I actually, when I went into a company once, they were asking what's going on with our sourcers. We've got a really good sourcing team. And I said, well, let me take a look. And I started looking at it, and they did have a really good sourcing team. The problem was the recruiters had a lot of applicants coming into the ATS, and then the sourcing team was giving them names, and the bottleneck was in the recruiting world because the recruiters didn't have time to follow up with the applicants and then all the candidates given to them by sourcers. So with unemployment like it is right now, to be useful to a recruiter, the sourcer needs to identify a list of candidates, pick the best, get them on the phone, and then present qualified, interested, available candidates. So I don't see it as a positive or a negative. It's just the current situation. As long as you realize what the current situation is and you don't mind getting on the phones, it's neutral for me.
Got it. Yep, great answer. And before I forget, I definitely want to give a shout-out to my overall favorite sourcing team, because they're a blast and so talented. And that's Team Insperity down in Houston. I love that. That crew are just some good people there, and I always have so much fun when I get to grab lunch or spend time with them. So a little sourcing shout-out there. So
You know what? I agree with you, and it's funny. Like, I'll look and see who is registered for our upcoming conferences, and the funniest thing is it's always Team Insperity. They're always the first ones. You know, half of them sign up for the next conference before they even leave the current conference. You know, they're just it's a good team, so I enjoy those guys. And I'm not talking about employer branding, because I don't talk about employer branding, but that team has a great culture, and they've actually built some really good employer branding into what they do. I mean, they all have blogs, and they all share a lot of pictures. I mean, basically, they've created an environment that any sourcer watching from the outside would want to be a part of.
Well, and that's, actually that leads to a great next question. So do you think And they are a fantastic example, because that's been a very concerted effort of socially jumping in. I mean, I'm literally, I follow all of them on Instagram. I mean, everything but Pinterest, because I'm just getting into that. I'm a little bit of a wading in as a Pinterest virgin, but Instagram all the time. It's just, I've got to know them so well because of the employment branding and how social they are. Do you see that being kind of the table stakes going forward relative to kind of not only sourcing, but let's just go to like the full-on talent acquisition space? You have to kind of do more of the concerted social overall kind of brand to really, really be relevant and stay competitive. Is that something you'd agree, disagree, neutral again?
You know what? I agree that as a department, you have to work on branding to stay competitive. As an individual contributor in sourcing, it's kind of like, you know, agency days, how many placements did you make last month? And all of that branding, as an independent, as an individual contributor that works in sourcing or recruiting, you need to be careful. You need to automate as much branding as you can, be authentic, but remember that what keeps your what keeps you employed is how many placements you make and how many candidates you present that are qualified, and that comes from proactive digging, not from branding. So I think it's necessary, but anybody that relies on it is going to have a lot of problems, because typically they want to see ROI on a sourcer way before the branding effects take place.
Well, and that's,
that makes sense?
That's great. Yeah, no, that's perfect insight, and that was always, you know, that was always my challenge. Going back, you know, my God, 20 years. Is that just used to annoy the shit out of me, and I just, once I'd focus, it's because somebody in the management chain of that would come beat on me, like, dude, you're not doing your calls, you're not making blah, blah, blah. So I would focus in for a few hours and knock it out, make my numbers, and then, you know, totally F off for the rest of the time. So I was
right.
I was a pretty awesome employee back then, I have to admit.
It sounds inspiring.
Some people probably did some drinking relative to managing me. I'm just a guess. But
right.
So on the sourcing, and this is something that we talked a little bit offline about, is kind of define a little bit of like sourcing as a function versus sourcing as kind of a an industry or a career path, like overall.
Yeah, no. So I think a lot of people that work in, you know, that have the title of sourcer these days are kind of coming from the third party agency recruitment, or they're recruiters that just really enjoy the identification and engagement piece more than the processing applications and extending offers. So, you know, I think what we see at our conference, I mean, it used to be when SourceCon started, it was for sourcers, and I even need to go in and start making some changes to our literature, because it says, you know, we are a sourcing conference for researchers and sourcers. And so what has happened over the years is that recruiters have jumped on, and now we're really a conference for anybody who sources, you know, because regardless of you source 10% of your day or you source 90% of your day, you need to be able to do it quickly and efficiently. So if you only have 10% of your day to source, you need to get to the right people immediately so that you're only making 10 phone calls to get to those first three candidates instead of building a list of 100 and then calling it for a week. So I think as a function, anybody in talent acquisition needs to get really good at sourcing, because, you know, even if you have a great sourcing team supporting you right now, or you're getting a lot of applications, the economy is going to change. There may be fewer applicants. You know, your sourcing team may go away. You never know what will happen. And the ones that will survive, to me, in the downturns and everything else, are not only the recruiters that can process applications and manage hiring managers, but they need to be able to get scrappy and find the right people. So to me, as a function, you know, sourcing is, you know, for anyone who identifies candidates on the internet or by phone sourcing. So
And the number of people that I see are just pure sourcers. And, you know, and when I say pure sourcers, all they do is identify candidates and hand them off to recruiters is very, very small at this point. You know, 20% of the people that responded to our survey actually do that right now.
Well, you know, those are, I would imagine if I had to pose a guess, the folks that only that's all that they do and focus on are the ones that are, you know, those are the black arts folks. They're pretty much in the background just like controlling and, you know, basically just generating and managing intelligence and information. So
exactly.
So you know
they're Mike Notaro, Glenn Guttmacher, John Bryant. They're the ones who can. They're really so technical, and they're finding things in ways other people can't wrap their brains around. And there's so much value. And they typically, those people are on larger sourcing teams, and they are paired with people that all they do is make phone calls. So there would be like those people doing research and then two candidate engagement specialists that all they do is call the people that those people generate for them. So you don't see them typically just supporting a team of recruiters that has a bunch of open recs and an ATS. They're typically on a larger sourcing team that basically the entire sourcing team is doing research and engagement, and they kind of divided it up among the team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. This is totally a selfish hypothetical that I want to run by you here. So if you took the sourcing function and you applied it to other verticals, like supporting a sales team, where you take somebody with sourcing talent and then put them on intelligence gathering around competitors and, you know, just all public and, you know, mostly public information. Do you see that being a legitimate business model? Is sourcing that powerful that you can apply it, that intelligence gathering, and calibrate that to be legitimate, like with a sales team?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really, that's something in our next survey I really want to dig into, because I don't think people realize what they have in their sourcing team. I mean, that is something, I've got friends that all they do is sales, and, you know, I'll show them tricks, you know, to see LinkedIn profiles they're not connected to, and it just blows their mind. And it's like sales teams and marketing teams should really take more advantage of their sourcers. The problem is, once you start doing that, is tying it back to the bottom line. And typically, they're not helping to pay for it. They're just asking for a favor. You know, hey, can you build me a quick list of these types of people? And so, you know, there's not a lot of ROI, you know, proof there. But there need to be more companies taking advantage of sourcing people. I mean, it's just like us when we're looking for speakers for a conference. You know, if you're a sourcer, it kind of brings a whole new perspective to that. You know, you can really surface people that are doing really cool things that aren't on the conference circuit already, you know. And when you're selling to people, you can find those people that other salespeople haven't found. So, yeah, it's huge.
Cool. Well, that's – thank you. That's one that I've thought about, and I do, you know, obviously – I do kind of the reverse engineering on the intelligence all the time because, you know, I love to get to the things that nobody else can find or thought about. So just need a validation from, you know, one of the experts. So you talked about speakers and conference. Great segue. So tell us a little bit about SourceCon. I have never been to SourceCon before.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
You have to go. It's awesome. So SourceCon is by far, before I worked there, now it's obviously my favorite conference, but before I worked there, I went to SourceCons. And kind of like you, the sourcing community are some of my favorite people out there. And I've talked to a lot of people in the world that say the same thing. I mean, they're very eccentric and creative, kind of hacker mentality, you know, they'll do whatever it takes to get to the right people. And so the conversations are fascinating. The content is fascinating. It's just it's a really cool conference. I went to New York and to the Dallas conference before I joined the team. And so it's just a great community. I mean, it's really, you know, if you look on the blog today, I mean, there's a sourcer in Amsterdam
wrote a bookmarklet that is really, it's a great way to help you kind of hack LinkedIn and see profiles you're not supposed to see. And so when he created it, he called me and he's like, hey, I want to share this with everybody. So we did a quick video where he demos it, and then you made it available on the blog. So it's really just a cool community of people that share tips and tricks and help each other get better. So it's a really, really cool conference.
Well, that is, dude, it's one of those conferences that I'm just enamored with, because there's so many people there that I respect so highly at what they do, and then just them as people. So tell us about the competition that goes on, because I think that's one of the absolute differentiators of that conference from a lot of the other conferences.
Yeah. So, you know, the people, it's kind of like, like I said, it's kind of like a hacker culture, and it's something they've done since the beginning of SourceCon. I wasn't there in the early years, but, you know, when they started SourceCon, they would do competitions, and they kind of plant clues around the Internet, and, you know, it's almost like an Internet scavenger hunt for profiles. And so one of the people that has organized a lot of them helped us, or she actually did it, I say helped, but she organized the SourceCon challenge for Seattle recently. And it was huge. I forget, I think we had 300 people participating in this, like, Internet scavenger hunt for these profiles. And we had a total of 5 people on site that had actually finished the online portion of the challenge. And then we put them in during SourceCon After Dark, which is kind of a mixer hackathon event after SourceCon, the first day of SourceCon at each conference. And so we had them in the room at SourceCon After Dark competing to solve the final pieces of the puzzle. It was awesome. And then Cameron Swinton won this year. He's a sorcerer over at Microsoft. But anyway, so that's the SourceCon challenge. It is. It's one of the coolest parts of the conference, is just watching. And the people that win the challenge, I mean, they're just really, really smart. And, you know, all of them have gone on to do great things in the sourcing world, and some of the most sought-after speakers. So it's a great challenge.
Yeah, that's – oh, my gosh. That's one of those that just makes it, like – especially if you have any geek DNA in you at all, any nerdish DNA, it's just like salivating. Like, oh my God, this is getting so awesome.
Yeah, no, it's fun to watch. I mean, it was in this little bar there in Seattle, and we had them all set up on one big tall table in the middle of the room, and everybody was just walking around the room, kind of watching them all compete. And the DJ would announce, you know, Julia Stone had the microphone from the DJ, and he would turn the music down, and she would kind of announce the next phase, and then everybody would dive in and watch them. It was a cool experience. I mean, they've done the challenge a few different ways. You know, sometimes there's a pre-conference challenge, and then sometimes it's just on-site. It just depends kind of what we do. So it's definitely a lot of fun. As the community has grown, it has been fun to watch the challenge and all the new people that are getting involved. So,
yeah, and that's I have got to spend some time with Jim Schneider at PepsiCo a few times, and then sit in on a bunch of his sessions and stuff. And I'm just like, it's just really, you know, it's really cool and really different. So I'm glad to see somebody is keeping it. I mean, you're kind of a purist and very passionate about it and very skilled in what you do. So I think that's just, you got a technician in there that's going to help just take the game up a little bit more fast and furious. So, what's something that in 2014 might surprise most people relative to kind of the where you touch talent acquisition and sourcing and in your world?
Yeah, so I guess the big thing that has happened this year that has been, you know, the biggest changes in the industry have been all of the aggregators. So if you look at companies like HiringSolve, TalentBin, Intello, Guild, Remarkable Hire, those are the ones that are really aggregating information from different sources around the web and then, you know, bringing them all into a combined profile so you can see more about a candidate when you're reaching out to them. So, you know, I think aggregators is that's going to continue to grow. Three sourcing is another one that just went into Dave McClure's 500 startups out in San Francisco. So there are a bunch of aggregators that are developing right now. It's funny. I was on a call with a group out in the San Francisco area, and pretty much all the directors of talent acquisition on the call had used at least two of the products. When you talk to a group, you know, say in Houston, that does oil and gas recruiting, none of them have used the tools. So on a national basis, unless you're really involved in high-tech recruiting, you probably haven't been exposed yet. But over the next couple of years, those are going to get more broad, and they're going to be more useful for people that fill, you know, mechanical engineering jobs and oil and gas, you know, engineers, so finance and accounting and things like that. So that's something that the average, you know, the person recruiting for the typical, you know, Fortune 200 company is going to get exposed to in the next year if they haven't already. So I think they're also going to start integrating more with CRMs. You know, it'll be funny to see who wins in this battle, because right now the CRMs are adding aggregated search, and the aggregated search, you know, providers, the like the ones I just mentioned, they're starting to add CRM-type solutions, and you've got LinkedIn adding a CRM element to it. So, I don't know, there's going to be a lot of interesting developments there technologically to see what happens. I think, you know, and the fact that all this data is so readily available, that's what's driving people to need the candidate engagement piece from their sourcers, because the names are there. Now we've got to find out how to get to the right names quickest, you know, because it's easy to build a list of 200. How do you get from 200 to 10, you know, for your first call plan? And then once you start that call plan, how do you get them on the phone? So those, you know, as you move into 2014, it's going to get easier every day to find people. So you've got to get better and more precise with who you're finding, and then figure out how to engage them. So that's the advice I would give to anybody sourcing today is, you know, don't leave all your old skills behind. You know, semantic search is a big thing too. You know, you've got Google Hummingbird just rolled out, and the search engines are moving away from the old keyword search into more semantic search. So you need to stay on top of that too to make sure that you're, you know, understanding how you should be searching instead of just using your old techniques that you were taught 10 years ago.
Well, those are some fantastic tips. And who doesn't want to use something named Hummingbird? I mean, damn, that's awesome.
Exactly.
I don't even care what it does, and I want to go use it right now. I'd go for it right now because it's cool. So we got about a minute and 40 seconds left, man. Conversations go fast. So tell us about when SourceCon is, where they can find information. Just kind of give us a little bit about your conference so that folks can get more information, and then we're going to roll on out. And by the way, The Cure, Love Cats was the name of that song. I promised I'd get it to you before the end of the show.
Awesome. I knew they had black hair and were around in the early 90s. I just didn't know which one it was. Thanks for checking. Hey, so SourceCon is going to be, the next one is going to be in Atlanta, February 19th and 20th. So you can get information at SourceCon.com, and at the top in the navigation bar, you'll see SourceCon 2014 Atlanta as one of the options there. But it's going to be awesome. I'm really excited about it. Our last event, we had 425 people in Seattle. It was an amazing event, and we had a great time, and I'm even more excited about this agenda. You know, that was my my first agenda that I had put together, and I sat there in the audience, and I was like, this is awesome, and but I would see holes. You know, I forgot to add this, I forgot to add that, and I had that experience under my belt when I put this agenda together, and I think we just really cover it all. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. So February 19th and 20th in Atlanta, the early bird deadline expires on December 31st, so if you need help explaining to your leadership team why you should be there, let me know, and I will help you sell that. If you need SPHR credits, you can get those. So, you know, even if you don't source, if you want to try to speak the same language as your recruiting team or your sourcing team, it's also a great place to get your continuing education and learn at the same time. So.
Well, perfect, my man. Thank you so much for spending lunch for us. Good to hear your voice. Hopefully we'll see you in person in the not-too-distant future. Folks, we're out of time. Talk to you tomorrow.